Well, we have a legend on the show this morning. There is a new exhibit at the Fenimore Art Museum in Cooperstown, Believe in Yourself, What We Learned from Arthur. It's an inside look at Mark Brown's artwork and stories. Next year, Mark Brown celebrates two anniversaries, 25 years of Arthur on PBS, 45 years of children around the world reading Arthur books. Well, Mark had many jobs early on. Eventually, he was rescued by an aardvark who appeared one night while telling his son a bedtime story. That story became his first book, Arthur's Nose, then a series of books, which became the longest-running animated children's program in history. He is a number one New York Times bestselling author, winner of three Emmy Awards, the George Foster Peabody Award, and most recently the Television Critics Award for the episode Mr. Ratburn and the Special Someone. It is a great pleasure to welcome Mark Brown to our program. In addition, we also welcome our other dear friend, Chris Rossi, who is the Fenimore Director of Exhibitions. Thank you both for being with us. What a delight to have you on the program.
Great
what
to be
a great
here.
Introduction, Joe. I'm kidding myself.
Well, I got to tell you, Mark, first of all, you and I have talked in the past, but I love having you on, and I'm such a fan of your work. But I have a course that I teach at college, and I was telling the students last night that I was going to interview you today. And it's early in the semester, but boy, it was the first time I actually saw real excitement in their faces. They thought that was the coolest thing that I was interviewing Mark Brown today. So I have.
I know. I started out speaking to elementary kids, and now I'm speaking to college kids. It's really amazing to see Arthur span these decades as he has.
They grow up. Don't they?
Yeah,
well,
they do.
Chris, let us begin with you. I remember when we were talking about the Keith Haring exhibit, which is having its last few weeks at the Fenimore and was wonderfully extended. Thank you very much. I'll not get a chance to see it. But you teased that this exhibit was coming and we said we would talk more about it. So give us a sense of how this all came to be, because it's very exciting.
Well, I think we started our conversation with Mark over 2 years ago, maybe. And we've been working to put together a checklist that reflects Arthur, but also the other wonderful books that Mark has illustrated. So we've got a real assortment in the gallery. And one of the things that I'm appreciating, I always like to see process, and we have some of the thumbnail sketches that Mark would use to put the books together. And it's just fun to see the stories come together and come to life.
When you had an idea for the exhibit, Chris, what was it? Was it was a retrospective to look at these anniversaries, to look at the broad of the totality of Mark's work?
That's where the conversation started, around the idea of the anniversary and Arthur. But we realized we needed to include more than Arthur, the other works that Mark's been involved with.
And Chris was so great about letting me suggest unlikely things. Like I had built these big monsters to put in our windows at Halloween time for kids that were inspired by a book I did with my buddy R.L. Stein. And Chris let me put them in the exhibit, and they really do add this extra dimension. And something that, you know, people don't know about me, that I love monsters.
Cool.
they're a great addition, and they're over in the area where we've got a video set up of Mark reading his stories. So you get to sit down in a small chair and listen to the stories, and you're flanked by monsters. It's perfect.
Do you have a sense... Mark, when you put together, when you figure out what you would like to contribute to such an exhibition of what is special to you? I mean, I assume that's what you would want to display, what feels special to you.
Well, you know, what comes to mind first, Joe, is this series of three books I did about a little character called Monkey. And I love reading reviews of the books to see what connects with people. But one of the best reviews came from this first Monkey book from a 7-year-old boy whose mom was writing the review, and she asked him to contribute something. And he said, oh, I love the art in this book. It looks like something I could have done. And, you know, that's exactly what I was experimenting with when I was doing these three monkey books, was to make the art really feel inviting. I hand-lettered all the text, so it looks like the printing that a child might have done. So I was really happy to be able to put things like that in the exhibit. And, you know, I kind of came to this whole Arthur adventure not really thinking I was a writer, but I think of myself more as an illustrator. So I love projects when I can collaborate with someone else's ideas and stories and then bring them to life with pictures.
When animation came about, as far as the series, the show on PBS, what was that like to put that in to put this character, who I assume is very, very special to you, to put it in the hands of other people?
Well, I hated it. It was a process of having to share something that was so personal to me, you know, and I felt very protective of Arthur. I had turned down a couple other television offers that required me to give up control of what happened to the characters. And I just wasn't comfortable with that. But PBS had this great idea. They wanted to use television and animation, these two seductive forces for kids, to make them want to read. And I think that's something that really worked with Arthur. We saw, you know, librarians were telling us about the amount of kids coming into the library, they couldn't keep the Arthur books on the shelves. So that was really exciting. But, you know, the best thing that I think that we've done with Arthur over the years is to tell children the truth. I think we all look to the media for truth. And I think that's the thing that I'm proudest of that Arthur has done.
And it seems to me, at least from my perspective, and maybe I'm biased because I work for public radio, but I would assume public television would be a wonderful partner in that, because they would see it the same way, that you would get a different reaction of having an episode featuring a gay wedding from PBS than you would, say, from another major network.
Absolutely. When we wanted to do a program about Mr. Ratburn getting married, you know, we had all kinds of directions from the writers. We have these brainstorming sessions. And when we came up with the idea of this opportunity that we could have a gay wedding, I didn't know if it was going to fly with PBS, but I was so proud of them that they really stepped up and said, yeah, go for it. And, you know, the response that I got personally from so many adults and younger adults who wished that they had a program like that when they were growing up. And it was, you know, it was a validation of life and what we have around us. And I'm really proud of that episode. I'm so glad it was so well received.
That episode was banned in the state of Alabama. If I were you, I would wear that as a badge of courage and honor.
And one of my sons married a woman from Alabama, and they are down there right now.
Oh, my gosh.
Is anything from that episode represented in the exhibit, Chris?
Yes, we do have a piece. And one of the things that I think is special about the exhibit is that the title also refers to a new book that's coming out, a book of Mark's that's like a retrospective of the Arthur stories. And those, I don't know if I want to say lessons, but, you know, things we've learned from Arthur are scattered throughout the exhibition, and including that story as well.
What has the reaction been like, Chris, for the early audiences coming in and seeing the exhibit, of their response to it in the first weeks?
Very enthusiastic. And of course, I think we hit on something early in this conversation, and that is, you know, you've got young kids who are big fans of Arthur, but then you go all the way up to, you know, people,
right?
Older people, seniors who remember their kids, their grandkids watching it, kids, people in their 30s, 40s who watched it when they were growing up. So there's this whole age span, which is a lot of fun to see these different groups engaging with the exhibition.
I feel so old, Chris.
I'm sorry, Mark. That wasn't my intention.
Well, what is it? What is it like, Chris? I mean, you do this. What is this like, Mark? You do this a lot, where you see kids and adults react to your work, and I can't imagine what that. I mean, you must be proud. It has to be just a lovely feeling of seeing how people react to what.
But
is.
You know, at the same time, it's just wonderful to get such positive reactions. But you're also reminded of the responsibility that you have writing these books and doing the shows. But you know, early on, when I took on this adventure of television, I had a great mentor and friend in Fred Rogers, who was so wonderful about showing us how we could use television to be helpful to kids and, you know, educate and entertain at the same time. I miss him almost every day. He was the real deal, and what he did for television and families with television, it's a legacy that we all appreciate.
You know, you almost make me cry. Fred Rogers was a mentor to me. When I was a kid in high school, cable had just come in, and there was a public access show, I was asked to do a kid show, and I didn't know. I mean, I did it, but I didn't quite know what to do. And I reached out to Fred Rogers, and I showed him a tape, and he responded, and we remained friends, and he remained a mentor for, you know, 30 years of my life up until his passing.
Wonderful.
And I never, and which is a common story. You hear so many people say that of how loving he was. But the idea, I mean, just the original philosophy that he had of that children's television, there was enough of pies going into people's faces that if we actually talk to children and we don't say we're going to educate them, we talk to them like human beings, that is a wonderful way to communicate. But I assume, and not to diminish Fred's role in that, but that seems, that had to have come somewhat naturally to you too. It seems to be part of your character.
Well, he always felt like such a kindred spirit. What comes to mind is this time we had. Fred wanted to do a show for kids that demystified animation. And so he came to my studio in Hingham, Massachusetts, and we filmed this episode. While we were waiting for the crew to set up, we had a little time to talk privately. And Fred said to me, "Mark, tell me about your grandma, Thora." And I just tears started to come into my eyes, because I don't know how he knew about her, but she was this one person in my life who really understood the importance of art to me. And she encouraged me, and she would save a little money every week to help me go to college that I didn't know about. And Fred said, "Oh, she sounds a lot like my grandpa McSeely." And, you know, every child needs just one person in their life to believe in them, to make it. And that really stuck with me. And, you know, I think that word believe that comes up in the Arthur theme song really comes from that moment with Fred.
That's beautiful. Will you be, have you seen the exhibit yet, Mark?
Oh, yes, I've seen it. And, I have to say, working with Chris was so much fun. She made it fun. And it was really hard. It was more work than I expected.
but now it's done.
A nice way of cracking the whip.
I try.
Many years of doing that. Yeah, many years of doing that, Chris.
Some experience with
getting those artists moving on time. When you look ahead, this exhibition runs to the end of the year, Chris. Are any programs that will be coming up with this and anything that features Mark?
We're working on having a story hour from the gallery.
Yeah.
And at this point, you know, with COVID considerations, we're figuring out how that's going to come about. But you can look forward to that.
That's terrific. And in the meantime, the exhibit, as I mentioned, runs through the end of the year. It opened in the middle of August. And I think, Mark, as you said, you've seen it. And do you do you like to see it with an audience? Like, do you like to see how people respond to it? Is that helpful, or would you rather just go into the car?
I believe that everyone should come in and, you know, respond to it in a way that feels genuine to them, and whether they like it or not. But I'm hoping that if they want to go into the gallery, that they come to it with some sort of positive.
Well, sure. But the question is, do you want to be around to witness that?
Not especially.
Right. Yeah. Well, I've had artists describe that as, you know, like attending your own funeral. Like, you know, you don't want to hear that stuff.
You know, I should add, as a gauge of how well people are enjoying, we've got an activity table set up in the gallery, and we've got sheets of paper for people to color on and draw DW and to draw Arthur. And the magnet board is filled with illustrations every day.
That reminds me, one of the nicest things Chris did for me in building this exhibit, for 40 years I have been saving kids' art, which I think is the best art ever. And they've sent me wonderful drawings of their versions of Arthur and Buster and DW. And Chris let me build this whole wall of the art from kids. And I think that's what you see first when you come into the gallery, this big wall of kids' art and a statue of Arthur in front of it. But it's very important. And I used versions of kids' art as the end papers for this new book, which is actually the last Arthur book, Bittersweet.
Why did you decide to end it?
Well, it's been 25 years. We have done 350 episodes. We've done specials. We have a new special coming up in September, a back-to-school special on PBS. We all kind of felt we wanted to go out, you know, on a high, and we have. And I mean, coincidentally, I am starting to work on a animated series for younger kids, for preschoolers. Mm. And so that had started to kind of blossom. And so I'm excited about having a new adventure and feel really good that I was lucky enough to have a dream team that has been with Arthur since the very beginning, 25 years ago.
And it's, it is bittersweet, but it is, I guess, you know, when it's time, right? You know, it feels right.
Yeah. Yeah. We all felt like we had done something really important. We had had great fun doing it. And all good things come to an end. I think Jackson Brown wrote a song about that.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. My last question for you, Mark, is what is it like to be next to Keith Haring's work?
Oh, I love his work. It's very exciting. The energy in his work is so childlike and so playful. It just feels like such a terrific match.
Chris, and I assume you agree that it, the two, while will not be together for the full time because the herring exhibit closes in just several days, but it works well together.
Oh, absolutely. They complement each other, and I think herring had this childlike energy that you can see in his drawings, you can see in his work, and that approach to life, that wide-eyed wonder that I think Arthur would be very at home with.
Well, it's so exciting. The new exhibit is at the Fenimore Art Museum in Cooperstown. It is open and on view through December 31st. It is entitled Believe in Yourself, What We Learned from Arthur. It is a great pleasure. Chris, I thank you so much for cracking that whip, making all that happen, and being nice to Mark in the process. And thank you very much. Mark, I can't thank you enough for being on the show. I so appreciate your work and the beauty that you have brought to this world of ours. And I appreciate your time. Be well.
Thanks so much, Joe.
Thank you. Again, the name of the exhibit, Believe in Yourself. It is at the Fenimore Art Museum, fenimoreartmuseum.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.